Let's go ahead, get started. This is the Vanguard Academy board meeting on Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. Let's go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's do a quick roll call. This is Kent Johnson, board chair.
Darren Jenkins, board member.
Johnny Jenkins, counselor.
Dave Kingston, vice chair.
Scott Kingston, board member.
Kathleen Kingston, assistant director.
Eric Freeman, board member.
Stephanie Evans, minute taker.
Kim Mangum, board member.
Suzanne Owen, director.
Marie Evans, assessment.
Okay, I think that's everybody. start. I open it up. Excuse me, for public comment. If there's any comment. If not, let's go ahead. The next item on the minutes is to clear the last time's minutes. If you want to go ahead and, does everyone have a copy of the minutes? Or have you had a chance to review them?
Did you get the minutes?
Yes.
Tiny little complex?
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
Motion to approve the minutes from February 28th.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Okay, the minutes are approved from my last board meeting. We'll go over the action items. The first one is reference to the app that has the details on the walkthrough in the next monthly summary. And that was Joy. Joy's not here this time.
She's coming.
Joy? She said she wasn't.
Oh, okay.
So Joy, I don't think she's going to come. Let's hold that over. Does anybody else have an update on that?
On what was it?
It says reference the app that has the details of the walkthrough in the next month summer. Okay. We'll hold that open until next time. The next item is get the stair tripping hazard fixed. Where are we?
We have requested two bids. We do get one bid. We still have not got the second bid. We'll probably be looking at other places to get bids from so that we can have valuable bids to look at. I still haven't been able to kind of get onto that site to see what is truly available. A lot of it is my lack of background knowledge to even know what I'm looking for. So, but it's in process, just we have not gotten two viable bids to make a decision yet.
Okay, so we'll just update it. So we have two bids, we're continuing.
So we have one, we just need to get at least one more.
Okay, the next item is to look into if we need to exit, if we start the building. We need an exit for the next, if we start the building.
When we did the plan, we had to very carefully define where everyone exited this part of the building in order to make sure we had enough stairs and exits. We had enough room for probably 23 more people to exit what we have existing. That's 23 more people. If we go into the south spot, really, there's a firewall that opens up. There's a firewall on that edge. And so when we go into that other portion, we're actually opening up the whole thing. If we fully occupied that, we anticipate we'd need two new stairs. So we need this one here and one here in order to exit the upper level. So if we are going to occupy that space, we need more exits. There's an investment required.
Okay.
And we're, are we officially occupying that space now?
We have one classroom down there, but it is not, it's not a situation that we could not move that class back into the main part of this building, but we have been using it for our assembly hall. Is that the same situation if it's an assembly hall outside of school hours or even during school hours, because we've had assemblies?
There's exiting requirements when you get a whole group of people. You could, we could argue the fact that all of the people that are down there are coming from here,
mm-hmm.
so they're not here, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
There are two ways out of that space,
mm-hmm.
and then they can come down and down the stairs, but if we add any more people to the...
So that number is based upon our fully expected occupancy, or on what number? Is it based on the 450 or our starting number?
Well, our occupancy is based on the use of the space, and we figured up to 523 people.
Okay.
So we don't have that many, right?
No, we're at 380, and our full enrollment based upon our charter is 450.
Do you have to have an exit for potential of everybody being over there? Or can, if you only have one or two classes, can you do it based upon just the number of people you'll have in there?
It's a judgment call right now. If I was the building official, if you follow the strict use of the law, we can't go back there and use it. If you look at it from a safety point of view, and you're having people that go from this side over to that side, and we're not, like if we have an assembly, then the exits, we could argue that the exits work because we aren't exiting everybody from the whole building. We haven't filled the whole building. We only have the same amount of people. We would need to make sure, though, that the exit lights, the exiting lighting is correct, so anybody that's over there in a confusion can get out. So we're in an iffy spot.
So
if
is the exit requirement based upon the capable capacity of people? Not the actual number, so it doesn't matter if you have 200 in the school or 1,000. It's just the size.
It's the size of
the size of the building.
Yes, it's based on the square footage.
Do we have exit signs?
There are exit signs, but they were put in specifically for the use of this north side of the building. I don't know if there are exit signs down in the south end that, you know, that point to the.
So we probably should walk it and see that we are not creating an unsafe condition.
Do you want to verify that for us?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, maybe we'll just leave it at that and you can give the recommendations on it. The next item is to look into what classrooms will be needed in the upcoming year.
We are increasing enrollment by approximately 75 to 90 kids next year, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in the enrollment. As far as the use of the rooms themselves, part of that will be dependent upon the schedule that we hold, whether that's a block schedule or modified block schedule, because that determines the number of teachers, which then determines the number of any of classrooms needed in any given class period. So that's undefined until there's a decision made on the schedule that we will follow.
Okay.
The bell schedule.
And that's in progress?
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later
okay. In
the director's report.
Okay. We'll come back to that then. So the last item is look to see what it will take to attend to amend the charter to increase the student count. And
so the deadline is July 1st of the summer prior to the following school year after that. So if we were wanting to increase enrollment for next school year, which is 2017-18, it's too late. If we want to amend the charter to increase enrollment for the 2018-19 school year, it's due by July 1st. So approximately 18 months in advance.
When do we anticipate we'll have to look into that?
About 3 years' time.
So we've got?
Between 3 and 4 years.
So this...
So we don't need to do it until the July 1st of 2018?
probably 19.
Okay, 2019.
Do we, so we're probably okay on this?
For the time being, I think so.
So I think we can check
it out. But we need to put it on a calendar.
Yes.
Yeah, we should put it on the calendar.
And I think if we anticipate 18 months in advance of the school year, or we if we talk fiscal year, each school year begins on July 1. Mm-hmm. And so they have to have it by July 1 so that it can get on their August approval calendar for the following school year.
Okay, well, we'll, so you'll probably have that on your calendar.
Yeah, we'll put it on.
Okay, that's the minutes and the open points. Why don't we go ahead and go on to the director's report.
I will start with the enrollment piece and then I'll turn it to Kathleen. You should have received a copy of, it's a copy-paste copy of our current charter, what it says that we would do as far as admitting students and the lottery process. And then there's also a copy of the state rule that is referred to in that. So I just gave that to you for your information. Right now, our enrollment is closed. We closed it on January 31st of 2017. At the close of that enrollment, we had 97 students enrolled. And at our current count for our intent of students returning, we have 368. Scheduled to return according to their forms. That leaves 82 open positions, which means we are 15 students over-enrolled. That's approximately 3% of our projected enrollment. I contacted the state today because, you know, they've been in conversation, can we over-enroll by a little, by a lot, at all. They have written the bill that states that, you know, there could be a little bit of movement. Primarily that bill is, though, for multiple campus schools. For instance, if you have a school that has an elementary and then they have a junior high and then they have a high school, they're talking, can I have over-enrollment at my elementary to compensate for my under-enrollment at another school? So it's not really changing the full charter enrollment. It is just kind of moving kids from building to building and saying that would be okay. It passed the House, passed the Senate, or whatever method or process it had to go through. It was up for review for the legislative session this last month or this month. It was not a high enough priority to put on the floor. So they have put it on the shelf and it will not be reviewed until next year at the legislative session. So what that means is that the current status quo stands. They brought that up at the last director's meeting. It was still somewhat confusing, so I just contacted the state charter director today, and I said, help me understand what to do. We've closed our enrollment. We're over-enrolled by approximately 3 to 5% of our students. May I enroll those students at this point in time? I asked even the question, can we educate them for free? And her response is, the board has already stated, and this is the Utah State Board of Education, they will hold schools to what is in their charter. So they will hold us to 450 count on students. And they go by grade bands, too. So it's junior high band, high school band, because you get a little more funding for a high school student than you do for a junior high student. Right now, our numbers, and it goes back to that same thing, can we have more at the junior high and fewer at the high school to compensate in that way? And we can do that. For one thing, it pays less dollars for that junior high student. I asked her what if we enrolled just a few extra students to accommodate or account for the average daily membership. Her response was, if we go over, we will be out of compliance of our charter. And she says, I don't know what the consequences will be. And so she says, I would not over-enroll by one student. They are, however, the charter board is going to propose at the next April board meeting that they have, they're going to ask if they can give us a 1 to 2% wiggle room, that we could maybe over enroll by 1 or 2%. That's not been approved. They intend to put that before the Utah State Board of Education. So until that point, she said, I would start with a lottery. Enroll exactly the number of students that you are chartered to enroll. Of course, families can choose to accept that or not. And if they grant the 1-2% leeway, then we can invite the next up on the wait list to then enroll at Vanguard. So I said, again, could we just not pay or not get paid, but still educate a few extra students? And she said, what happens is because we have to turn in our daily count to the state, we submit it every day. And she says, once we submit to the state, they will pay for that student. And so they will not allow us to over-enroll.
That's different than last year, then.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's been such a hot topic conversation that it's not probably going to be overlooked. We've kind of gotten our hands slapped for any of us who have enrolled over our numbers. Because that was not supposed to have happened.
What's the policy for a public school on that?
Same. The public school don't have a cap on the only cap they have is the capacity of their building. So they can turn kids away if they're out of the area, if their building is full. They're not limited to the students that they can enroll.
If I understand correctly, the proposed law seem to be being manipulated for multi-campus schools. The end results aren't any different than if they were a single campus school.
Correct.
And so that's
still looking at.
I can't even imagine that getting passed unless somebody's really marketing themselves as a multi-campus school. And then once that happens, they're going to have to give it to the others. It's just illogical.
Yeah.
But if we are going to have 450 students and we want to have 465, shouldn't we be asking for an increase this year?
That's
it's too late.
Question.
No, but I mean,
July 1st.
For the year after next.
For the year after. And wouldn't it make sense for us to have the ability to have 490 with the idea we're going to keep it at 460 and then we're not out of compliance?
Well, the reality is we get paid for the number of students that are attending our school. That's what the average daily membership means. So whether we write our charters to say we want 475, whether we want it to be 490, some of the students that have enrolled are very young, and they may choose even to remain in the elementary setting for another year.
Okay, but do we need to give ourselves that leeway?
I think that's a good point.
We need to get ready for the next year, for sure.
And then is it a legal question? You asked, if we had 15 students that are not there, they're invisible,
mm-hmm.
and we never count them,
mm-hmm.
are we in trouble? I mean, if we count them when we have five people missing in order to keep making the five, but when we don't count them, then that's a legal question.
If we
never count them.
They can't be on our system
if
they're not there.
So I think to set up,
okay.
Why don't we bump that 10% just so we have our own leeway?
Maybe, yeah.
The numbers just aren't there.
We don't have enough.
Don't have enough.
But
so do we feel comfortable just leaving it where we are?
I feel very comfortable leaving where it is right now for the next 2 years at least.
So you're talking about the 2017-18 and 18-19?
Yes.
You should be okay?
Yes. And then after that, we would, I think, want to be looking at increasing our enrollment.
Do they penalize you for having less than your charter?
No, we just
funded.
We
several
only get funded for
more,
what?
Yes.
For the number of students that are attending. So they're not going to dock our pay, so to speak. We simply will just get funded for the number of students who are attending our school. They count October 1, and then they also do average daily membership. So if we end up with an average daily membership of 448 students, then yes, our budget will be short by 2 students worth of WP.
When do we anticipate the state board making their decision on the 1% over under?
Their proposal is they'll put it before the board in April, and hopefully they would make a decision at that
in
point
April.
In time, in April.
Could that be enough time to
yes.
enroll for?
Yes, because we are in a lottery situation. We do need to hold a lottery. And so the question I had for the board is, do we need to hold a lottery, or can we just get all, you know, all of the 97 kids in? The answer is no. And so we're in a lottery situation to where we will enroll 450 students based upon what we have now, what the ones that have stated they intend to return, and those who have enrolled. Any of those students can choose not to attend, and if that's the case, the next one on the wait list will be invited up. And that would continue to happen even in the middle of the school year. If we lost a few, we can invite the waitlisted student to come up, whether they choose to or not would be up to the family.
So the average daily membership is taken on October 1st through?
No, October 1st is our actual count
okay.
of those in attendance at Vanguard. And then throughout the year, because we send a daily membership count up to the state, and so it's calculated average how many students were in attendance, or not in attendance, but were actually actively enrolled at Vanguard.
So we need to make sure all the kids are here on October 1st.
Yes, that still needs to happen, and they need to be here every day. Attendance is crucial. But it's not attendance per se that determines average daily membership. It is those enrolled
right.
in our school.
So if you have 20 kids absent every day, but they're still enrolled at the end of the year, you'd still get the credit for the full number.
Except if they're absent, if there's 10 consecutive absences.
It's not the
absences.
Same ones, but different kids.
Right, yes.
Right.
Yes, and absence doesn't count for on that membership count.
Except for October 1st.
Except for October 1st. And they do, they take attendance. They go into random classrooms. They have that. We have to print up a roll. They count, they call roll, verify that, you know, we're legitimately holding school and the kids are really there and on the roll and whatnot.
So will that be October 2nd? October 1st is a Sunday.
Yes, yes, it'll be October 2nd.
So no one can be absent that day?
They shouldn't. We've had incentives at every school I've been, because they've done average daily membership out in the district schools for years. So anyway, that's the enrollment, and we do need to set a lottery date and time, and a board member does need to be present at that time. So if y'all want to consider who would like to be a part of that, I would think that sometime within this the month of April, we would like to do a placement test on the 20th and 21st of April. So it would be better if that lottery is conducted prior to that time so that we know which kids to administer that assessment to, but it's not required. We could do the lottery later after that. So just need to say that so that I can get notices out to families that have enrolled. Okay, and then on the other part, the schedule, I sent that out, and it is part of the documents to be approved, but just wanted to let you know, based upon data that we've reviewed as far as our science SAGE data and our current SAGE interim data, it does not appear that having additional time in a language arts class has made the difference with the data. And when we're looking at our Snow College classes, we've also had contact with SLIC. They may be able to send a professor or two or an adjunct professor or two over to teach a couple of classes, but only if we have a schedule that kind of works with theirs, which would be the traditional block, which would be that we still maintain that A and or A days is always Monday, Wednesday, B day, Tuesday, Thursday, so that it better correlates with the college schedule. So Snow College, SLIC, the data doesn't support the modified block for some subjects, and the number of teachers required to teach those subjects. I am highly recommending that we go with a traditional bell schedule or traditional block, which is four periods a day between about 85 minutes, 85 to 90 minutes a day, with all classes being held every other day. So,
when do we make that decision?
I'm hoping that that can happen as you look at the bell schedule and the calendar when it gets to the voting items, but I just wanted to kind of put that up there. That's what's going to help determine the classes needed for next year, too.
So today?
Yes.
Okay.
You're recommending, say, traditional block? Or?
Traditional block.
To go back to?
Yes, that's what we did last year. And anyway, I'm not myself convinced that the data shows it's been beneficial to have the classes every day. And I think that it's been detrimental to our science classes that we have taken those minutes out of those classes. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
And then Kathleen, I'll turn it to Kathleen for the enrollment and or for the financial.
These are the on the left side, since we were talking about enrollment, the left side with the enrollment numbers are where we currently stand with the number of students and the number of grades, and then that far right column are the projected numbers based on the current enrollment. As Suzanne went over, those are the breakdowns of each grade level. So the total of 467 is where we are with the new enrollments. And then we would do the lottery and proceed on, as Suzanne mentioned. On the other side, financial side, the you can see that in the middle section, I'm tracking from the previous month to the current month so that you can see the percentage of change. And for most areas, we are on track. And overall, we are on track in the positive for our revenue over expenditures. The local funds, if you remember, is low because of not getting donations. Kim sent some information about Orbital ATK had made a donation to Utah schools for STEM purposes. I'm working on making contact with them to see what we can do there and to see if we can do something that might look like it probably be for next year's moving forward as this year's coming to a close. Other than that, are there any questions about the numbers of them? There's not anything too significant other than on the property, the decrease. The reason we're over on our actual year-to-date expenditures instead of the projected, we did do those, the Chromebooks, the purchase of the Chromebooks and the carts, and things that we talked about that increased the purchases through February compared to what we originally had.
What's causing your big discrepancy in the employee benefits? It's in our favor, but did we change
something? We didn't. We had looked at hiring another history teacher originally, and we never did hire that history teacher. And we did not hire another SPED teacher, so there are at least two teachers that we didn't hire that play into that number.
Well, Has Grace had a chance to look at these numbers?
She's been out of town, so I didn't get a chance to review it with her.
Yeah, that's my main recommendation, just make sure she looks at that. Okay, so everything?
This last thing for finance. was the fee scheduled? This is your proposed fee schedule. It's actually the same as last year. We added about a driver's ed. We did not start the year with the driver's ed in place. So the only change was to add the driver's ed fee. And then I added a note at the bottom. When we waive the fees, then all of those class fees and course fees, everything is waived, and Vanguard just takes that, which, as we considered that, talked to Susan, that sometimes we looked at other policies in different schools. A lot of times they will waive it, but they can also require community service type thing or some type of involvement, so that for every so many dollars you waive, you do a certain number of hours. And we wondered if that would help to have the parents there spend, get that some of that involvement in, and to also see what, when it is waived, what kind of pay some kind of price to recognize the benefit they're getting. Does that can be? I'm not quite sure how to articulate that. But wondered if that would be something we would want to consider as we look at the fee schedule and consider waiving fees. So they could do some type of service in lieu of payment.
Seems like that's a good opportunity.
I think it's good too, but how would you enforce it if they're waived at the beginning of the year, and then how do you hold them to that to make sure that they do it?
Do they pay their bills?
Well, you waive the fees at the beginning of the year at registration.
But then, so when you register, we waive the fee and then said, now you need to do 10 hours. How would we reinforce that? Those two questions.
I think the accounting of it would have to be done, and so it would be on there until the hours are served, and then at the hours served, then it's deducted from their account.
So you would
show a bill due.
You would show a bill due until they pay.
So how is it determined when we waive? Is it the judgment of one person?
It's using the guidelines pretty much that the free and reduced lunch is used. So their family income, family size is used to determine whether it would be waived. So if they qualify for free, then their fees are waived.
Do they fill out an application?
Yes, they do.
So could the application have options of service on it?
Yes, it should, actually. It's a good idea.
And then if they don't pay through the whole year, then at the beginning of the next year, they're in arrears. Is that a problem? Could that be a discipline?
We would just have to have some kind of collection procedures and things like that you'd follow, same as for school lunch balances and things like that we follow to collect accounts. Part of the reason we looked at it is there's our families who do pay all of their fees that help carry the weight of other families, and to help kind of balance that out, maybe they would do some type of service or something like that. So there would be the issues again of the collecting of balances and things like that, and making them come in and serve the time and the schedule. And so there would be some of those things that we would have to consider as we make that decision. But that was something that we can talk more in detail in the finance committee or something. But I thought I'd put that out there as we're looking at the fee schedule, if anybody has any input.
Anything else before we go to finance?
I think they just finished finance.
Yeah. So let's go ahead with the academic.
So for assessment, then we have a report that's a partial report based on what we have available so far on our ACTs. We did get our reports back on the individual students, how each individual student did. We don't have our overall, like, school percentage and things, and we won't have that until scores are taken from makeup test day. So we had a makeup day on March 21st, and so 3 to 8 weeks after that, then they'll have those scored and reported, and then we'll have our school averages and all of those kinds of things. Then this summer, they will send us a report that kind of compares us to other schools, or that we can see how we did compared to other schools. But until everyone is finished, then we can't really, or that's not really known. So what I did is I just pulled data from last year's national scores and Utah scores, and that's what you'll see at the bottom. The composite math and English. When we get our state grade, then they look at, like we've talked about before with the SAGE proficiency and growth scores, they also look at number of kids that scored an 18 or higher composite on the ACT. So I included that on the report. And then in the math and English, the 23 and 17 is what Snow College requires for a student to enroll in a math or English class there.
So, Snow College requires 23.
It's for math, 1050.
And
so we have 29.
We don't know where we're at average-wise, as far as compared to the 20. Or to the 23, we're 42% above average. National average comparison, the math would be 20.6, and we don't know where we compare to that.
Is the math 42% above the average or above
23?
Yeah, 23. That's the percent of our students that got 23 or higher. 42% of our students that took it got 23 or higher in math. Yeah.
But like Scott says, we don't know for national.
No. So the... What you see there on the Utah at the bottom that has a percentage and a scale score or a raw score, I am not sure what, so they just call it readiness. So they figured, or when they looked at their data showed 59% of students were college ready in English. And I couldn't find what that... And that's what I couldn't find. And they said that we would get more information as all of our scores are completed and as all the other school scores are completed.
If that's what Snow College is using, it seems like that is likely what they're using as readiness. And if that's the case, we're above average for Utah. But we don't know for sure.
I don't think it would be any higher than that to be considered college ready. I think that would be, because Math 1050 is one of the higher level ones. In fact, if you took Math 1040 or Math 1030, it's the requirement's not quite as high. At least for Salt Lake Community College. I'm not sure on Snow College.
We did have 65% above composite.
Where did you get that 18 for your, is that compared to?
So that's what the state will give us plus points towards our national, towards our grade when they grade the scores.
So that would that be considered your college ready as an 18 composite?
I'm not sure if
so we're graded
that's what they have there, but yeah. Yep, that's part of our state grade.
So why didn't we have the science on here?
Because I didn't have a number from the state to know what they consider. And we don't have one from Snow either. Snow just lets you take science classes. So I didn't have anything on that yet, but as soon as I get that, then I will. I'll get a report out that includes the science and the reading as well.
Do you know how many averages on science, right?
I have each individual student, and I can get averages.
So you just went through by hand? And
yeah. The retake day was March 21st, and so we're finished with that. And so, yep, once those scores are back, then we'll know.
Retake or the missed?
It was a makeup day for, not retakes, but makeups.
Yeah, poor choice
of words. My fault, sorry. But yeah, we're graded on the ACT. We're graded on kids that are taking college classes. We're graded on students that graduate. All of that goes into our school grade.
Would it be possible to compile the averages and send them out? Just enter them all into a spreadsheet and average it, and that'd be interesting to see what our averages were compared to national students in the spreadsheet.
Yeah. Yeah, I can figure those. They said they'll send them out once they have our scores from our makeup day, but I can figure those if you want them sooner than that.
And what day is that?
It's 3 to 8 weeks from the 21st, so probably just a couple more weeks. I think we got these 4 weeks after?
It was 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
One day.
Okay.
He was watching
for me. English was 51% above. It's 42% above. Must have done okay in science if our composite is higher than 18. If we had that many higher than 18.
Science, maybe.
No science, maybe. Maybe. I guess you really can't tell.
I wish I knew the number that they used in science. Well, and you can look at each kid. I don't know if any of you saw individual reports, but it will show on each student's individual report, and it'll show their ranking.
It's like this.
Yeah, I saw one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ranking,
so it'll
Utah
show their ranking in the nation. Mm-hmm. I believe that's, U.S. rank.
Percentile.
Yeah,
they do this. They actually do a state ranking on this one, too.
Does it also show the
there's
score
the U.S. and the
state?
State.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a school rank on this one. And then the state has decided that next year they will include the writing portion for ACT as well, which they didn't include that this year. The kids didn't take the writing in Utah. So I've taken this and gone over it with the teachers. They turned in, as I reported last month, the teachers turned in highlighted rosters that showed which students they were predicting or projecting to be proficient. And so we took those same rosters and marked of those which ones were where they needed to be in that subject on the ACT.
So they did it beforehand?
They did it with the interim data and classroom data, and then we took those and added in the ones that were where they needed to be on the ACT as well, so they can have another measure there to see where we are and where we need to be, what we need to go from here.
So were they correlated?
In most cases. There were some of both ways, some that they didn't predict to be proficient that were high enough on ACT, and some that they predicted proficient on SAGE that didn't score high enough on ACT. So we had a few that went both ways, but for the most part they were about like the teachers had felt they would be.
Do we benchmarks and...
So the teachers are doing a really good job using the benchmarks. I was in one of the LEAD clubs today, and the teacher had already given the benchmark, and then she had them go through it in groups to kind of evaluate what the misunderstanding was and what, anyway. And the teachers are really invested in those and really, anyway, they're getting a lot of benefit out of those benchmarks, and I think that it's going to make a big difference in all of our subjects. As we look at the science, the benchmarks is probably the most encouraging data I've seen in science. So if that's any kind of a predictor, which they say it is, then I think the second half of science is going to be remarkably better than the first half.
Is it? Do you think it's tied to those benchmarks?
I do. I've had teachers in every subject come to me and talk to me about how it's how beneficial it is, because they can see exactly the question, they can see exactly the requirement, and they can go through them as a class and kind of help the students evaluate the information.
Are we doing that through all the classes?
I haven't verified that every teacher is using them. I will do that before the end of the week.
All teachers have used them at least once.
For sure. Because there was at least one that hadn't until they opened up again from being closed. And there's another one that I hadn't known for sure that I felt like I needed to check on, but if you...
When I talked, there may have been one that I'm not remembering, but I thought that everybody, when I had talked, we had talked to them, that they had,
And I could be mistaken too, but I thought he said he hadn't until
after,
so, but yeah, I will make sure.
Do we want that as an open point?
No, I think that you can follow up on it.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice to get a real pretty report that shows the national and Utah all the averages on this ACT.
With ACT.
Yeah.
We'll see what the
Once we get all the information back from them, I'll make sure I get that to you.
And could you also correlate that to SAGE? Or I guess we could do it ourselves. But
no, I'll see what I can do.
If it fits.
I should have come up with something, yeah.
Yeah, and grades. That would actually
would be helpful.
Yeah, I like it.
So we were challenged, as a parent challenged us on the SAGE testing. And I can imagine that anybody ever asks us about how we're doing. Are we comfortable where we're at or not?
On SAGE?
On what we're doing to prep and how our students are going to do.
I think we've... Last year being our first year, I think there were a lot of unknowns and a lot of learning. I think this year we are going to be a lot more prepared than we were last year.
And we know why.
I think so.
I don't know if we can ever say that we know why, but in looking at the data and looking at the changes, you know, there are a few variables in place, and I mentioned one of them as far as the schedule, you know, given mm-hmm. blocks of time so they have that class every day. But in the math curriculum, we've switched it over to a different curriculum, so we've kind of thrown an extra variable in there that wasn't present in the other classes. So part of it, you know, we're talking a lot about test-taking strategies, that academic knowledge appears to be there in so many of our kids, and then the test comes out and it's not where we would anticipate it should be. And so to have that parent or any parent say, sit down with their student and say, what happened here? And you know, when we talked last year, when we got the results back, then there was kind of a negative perception on the SAGE itself, and more of kind of an apathy. Kids didn't feel like that it counted. They weren't going to be graded on it. It didn't really matter. I don't have to do well.
That's a cultural thing.
Yes.
So is our culture, or is it improving? Are we fixing our culture?
To a certain extent,
and do we have
yes.
a plan? How do we do that? How do you fix the culture?
I think a lot of it is that we start getting excited about it and help the kids see, and it's nice when parents, grassroots movement, get involved too to
help the kids to understand that, you know, it makes a difference. And so it's just a matter of helping the kids to see that it is a measuring tool and they're part of that measurement and get them invested.
I'm not trying to prolong this, but when I went to work with Kennecott and I found out that the most important thing out there was safety, mm-hmm. and it was, and it is, and it goes clear to the top. And the guy that saved Alcoa came in from the State Department or something and came in and made safety the most important thing. And when everybody understood that, it is the culture. So if we look at our culture is to excel or to do well, we have to make sure that everybody knows that's what we're trying to do. And I know you are, and I'm not criticizing anybody except for I'm just wondering if it is that really in our culture, because if there's apathy there, it's because that statement isn't getting out. We're awesome. You know? What does that mean? That means we do well. But you feel comfortable that we're moving in that direction well? And is there any simple little things we can do to improve that? That's the question. Because I saw that.
Yeah.
Other things.
I think more celebrations and academics and awards, and I think we need to
more of that. Putting the motivation in there.
So, but it's the culture. That's who we are. We're proud of it. So, that's what I'm talking about. If there's something like that, we should do.
And it comes in everyday language, and it comes in.
A lot of different ways. That was where you wanted a monthly pep talk or something.
Yeah.
Or weekly.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Even somebody from the outside that comes in and says
just.
Says something.
Yeah. Who wants to be first?
We could put him in the podcast. You could be
But it's bought off. It has to be bought off by everybody.
Yeah.
We have to talk about it or it doesn't happen, that's all.
What suggestions do you have?
Well, I think celebrating success is good. Mm-hmm. Understanding where you're really at is good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll use this example. When I was a senior in high school, they made me Sterling Scholar. And as soon as they made me Sterling Scholar, my grades went up. Now, I changed nothing. It was the perception that made the difference. So we have to change our perception of who you are, what you are, and what other people think about you. And then it makes a difference in who you are and what you do.
See a lot of schools, and you see the things they're celebrated or given rewards for. And Jody used to teach over at Bing. One of her complaints was that they used to put a lot of emphasis on sports and football. And you kind of think a little bit about that idea in the school, and they used to have pep rallies about football and talk about how the football team won and all this. And the kids grow up thinking, man, wow, we did good in football. I want to be on the football team. You know, when you hear some people's perception of what a football player is why you run out and slam yourself into this guy and get beat, you know, have a little snot beat out of you. Wow, I want to do that. And why? Why do they want to do it? Because they get rewarded. And I think we need to have that celebration, that idea, not of sports, but academics, and even behavior. You guys are acting big. You guys are getting good grades. You're excelling. It's got to be that they posted on the podcast, not the basketball team one, mm-hmm. celebrate, but that we did good on our SAGE scores. Celebrate the kids that did good on their SAGE scores, their ACTs. Yeah. Look at these guys. Joni even pointed out that she went to Ames School, which is one of the top charter schools, I think, in the state, if I remember. It's one of the top five or so.
Yeah.
And she says when you walk into their celebration, they have a, you know, every school has their, and it's next to Cottonwood.
It's in Cottonwood.
It's in Cottonwood.
It's in the same building.
And in the Cottonwood hall of walls of their
Wall of Fame.
Football and basketball and this and this. And then the Ames one was...
It was like the academic decathlon.
Academic decathlon.
All the different academic clubs. And
whatever it is. But it's, and it's showing the kids that, wow, you did good in this and you want to excel in this area.
Mm-hmm. Can you do that with the SAGE scores?
Yeah, the SAGE scores.
You can't reward a SAGE score, but you can announce... I mean, if you're doing by school or checking our progress as a school as a whole, anyway, we need to research what incentives or whatever can be put into place because they have. And that's a lot of the reason what happened last year is, you know, we felt so constrained. We're brand new. We're careful, towing the line. You know, we can't incentivize. We can't this. We can't. And that it was a culture that was built around that. And I really like the idea of just really getting out and doing some celebrations and, you know, celebrating who we are at Vanguard. That's why we're here. We're a STEAM school. We're the future. We are the future. And we need to build that culture in the hearts of our kids.
Some ideas on how to do that. It's right next door here at Endeavor. They've got their academic achievement center posted on the wall of all the kids that have done well in different things. I don't know if it's probably not SAGE, but it's different scores that they received throughout the quarter of the semester. And they say there's a lot of activity and a lot of interest in that area.
Yeah, and we thought about it. This year we haven't done so much. Last year we did post honor roll and whatever. And in our assemblies, we do celebrate 4.0 students, and we've talked a little bit about those kinds of things, but we've not done enough. We've not celebrated it and highlighted it enough.
Yeah. We did just recently have some of the benchmark high scores in one of the podcasts, and we're implementing some growth mindset lessons. So, I don't know, kind of moving in that direction, but definitely need more.
We talked about this before when we were looking about what we were going to do, and I don't know what happened. But in one of the ways that the safety is so important at Kennecott is because every single meeting, every single gathering, first thing you talk about is safety. And we talked about, well, maybe the first thing we talk about, no matter when we meet, is what makes somebody excellent. Or that's the whatever the phrase is that you want to pick. Every meeting, every assembly, every class, you start and say, what is it that makes somebody excellent? And somebody comes along and says, well, when they do their homework. Or when you, I'm not going to make up all the stories, but if you did that for just 1 minute before you start any meeting, what is it that makes you excellent? And then everybody, every day, they know, oh, somebody may ask me what makes me excellent. So every time you get into a gathering, that's what they do. And you know that's what you do. And so pretty soon you say, being excellent is the most important thing in this company. And being excellent, or safety is. And the reason why safety worked is because then as soon as anybody could talk about a safety issue, then they could talk about anything. So the company would talk about what needed to do to improve. And so if you start talking about excellence, and everybody knows that when they say something about what makes you excellent, they can share what they think can happen to improve excellence in the school in every single manner. The teachers can do it when they're in their form because that's what they're going to be asked to do. How do we make us more excellent? As a board, we sit here and we start out our meeting and we say, okay, let's make an excellent moment. What do we do to become more excellent?
So make that an open point. let's follow up on it.
That's what you do every time. You meet. What is it we do to make more excellent? I'll just have one little second. I saw somebody do this. I saw somebody pick up a paperclip. Remember how cool that is?
Is it to come up with how we're going to include that?
And we have included shout-outs in our podcast and such.
We have shout-outs in our podcast, and we have good things every Monday. So we have a podcast every week on Tuesday? No, it is Tuesday. Good thing is Monday. Good things is Monday, and shout-outs is in the podcast on Tuesday. And on good things, then every leadership class
goes around the, and so every kid in the room talks about something good that they've noticed within the last week at school. So
it can't be too long. It has to be quick, to the point, and then we move on.
Yep.
So our mission says we're going to be excellent in science.
That's right.
Do we, how often do we tell the students our mission? On a daily, weekly, monthly basis? And how many of them would know if you asked them what the mission of our school was?
Make it a goal to see how many kids can memorize our mission.
Yeah, and I like and Kim's comments. Just make it a culture. Everything you do is just pay guard.
At least they should walk away knowing that that's what our...
That's who we are.
That's who we are, yeah. So...
Every slide of the leadership lessons.
But it can't be vain repetition.
Okay, anything else on academics? Why don't we go ahead, should we go to the school schedule?
So I'm assuming that is the calendar?
Sorry.
Are those the, because it says it doesn't have them there.
Yeah, it's the calendar. And the...
So that's what I gave to you a month ago, gave to you again last week.
I looked at it, I didn't see any problems with it.
Sorry, what?
I looked at it, I didn't see any problems with it.
And I tried to include maybe some review points that you could look at to see as far as the process that I went through to put it together. It'd be nice if we could vote on it, or if there could be a vote on it, so that we could move forward with it, and that would be what we do. And I would ask also that if you feel prepared and feel comfortable also on the bell schedule, if you feel like that traditional block would be the right way to go, it'd be nice to have that moving forward.
Would it be the actual bell schedule, or just that it's block or traditional?
That it's block or traditional. But the actual bell schedule, I mean, it has to align with snow.
Yeah.
So you got the registration on August 9th through the 11th.
And
the first day of school is the 21st. Is that enough time to do your schedule between those two times? Or?
And as far as registration, that should be the point that they are, and we talked about this too. It's a very good question. Last year we had registration. We had maybe up to half that came in and registered, and that's just coming in and paying their fees and getting, you know, if they wanted to get any of the school shirts, pay for the yearbook, etc., pick up their schedule and call it good. And then we had back to school night, and well, the remaining half of the parents
so it didn't
registered
work out
that
as well
night.
As we thought it would.
No, it didn't.
So is something going to be different?
So, not necessarily.
Results, or?
So that, well, and that was the question we had. Do we hold a back to school night, or do we hold registration, or do we make it one and the same? And if we do it at registration or at back to school night, it really is going to have to be, we're going to have to start earlier in the night. It goes. And it's a flood. It's a flood. And trying to have us be able to manage that many people wanting to get this shirt and pay this fee and pick up their schedule and get this and, oh, they want to make class changes now. And that's one reason for wanting to do the registration earlier, so that if there are concerns about their schedule, that they can be addressed before school gets up and running.
What's the downside of opening up earlier and leaving it open longer?
I don't know that there's a downside.
Wonder if you need to switch around back
except
to school night registration day.
Yeah,
and
just
tell
making
you can't register
it
on back to school night. These are the things you can do tonight, but you want to register, you can register tomorrow or the next day at registration.
Yeah, and if we did that, we'd most likely need to have back to school night, like you mentioned, to have it earlier on. A couple weeks before school starts.
I think you should decide what you want to do that night, and then just tell them, we're not registered, this is back to school night.
Yeah.
We're doing whatever you do, selling shirts or seeing classes. If you want to do registration, this is the dates for registration.
Yeah.
If you're over getting overworked, if it works out for you, you're okay doing that.
Well, and like I say, it's not as it is because, you know, and maybe the problem is registration is during the day and it's not a priority, or it hasn't been a priority for families to come in during the registration. They just, I guess, assumed, and I rightfully so because we allowed it to happen, that they could just come in and register on back to school night and just do it all at once.
I guess the question is, do you want it to be the same, or do you want us to, or do you want to do any changes?
Don't do that again.
I'm not sure.
Well, again, if we had it clearly defined, that would be fine, and I don't have a problem. I just put things as they were, and I don't want it to be the same as it was last year. So it would either need to be that we set the parameters more clearly and we just don't register on back-to-school night. We do need to have a parent night to fulfill some Title I things that we've got to take care of as well. We've got to get that information out according to our Title I requirements. So we do need to have that parent night happen.
We could possibly do it the first or second week of school too, after school had started.
The parent night.
Yeah.
So if we had back to school night after school had begun, then it wouldn't. But then, you know, it would. I asked the question, what's the purpose of back to school night?
So I was just going to ask you, what's the purpose of back to school night? Do you have a before school or after school? What do you guys do at back to school night?
The thing that we have done is we have gone over some policies and procedures, any changes and updates on those. We've also done the Title I, what's involved with Title I, and then they've been able to go and look at the classrooms, go to the classrooms, get disclosures from teachers. On that night, et cetera, et cetera.
Seems like you'd want it before school starts.
We could actually almost do a video or something where that's part of the registration process and they go through these series of things, okay, do this and then this and then this, and that would be part of it to where all of our staff would be separated and we could have enough staff in the right places and maybe even provide a part of our registration during the night where it's available more for parents.
If we're going to provide it during the night, it's like Darren said, it's either going to have to be that we're going to do registration that night or we're not. But the combination of the two is
I'm not going to register. I would have one or two nights of registration available after work so the parents can do after school. But I would just say if this is back to school, I don't really register. If you're getting overwhelmed. If you think you can handle something, then do it. But if you're getting overwhelmed, I'd just say we're not doing it.
And then, again, staffing it, you know, for it to run for 2 or 3 weeks, you got to staff the office for 2 or 3 weeks for that to happen. And that's not really feasible for, you know, the family that drops in here and drops in there and whatever else. So I think it would need to be consolidated down to...
So right now you're having registration day?
That's been what we've done.
Wouldn't you just pick a registration day and maybe a registration night, maybe 2 or 3 days, or however many you want?
I'd probably go with just a couple. Okay. That should be sufficient to get everyone registered.
We might be talking about this later, but is your software that you're going to be migrating to going to allow people to register online, perhaps, and take away some of that congestion?
Was that a piece that we're going to talk about? Maybe what we can do is we can move that
towards
that direction. That is a component that you can choose to purchase as part of that software. It's not part of the package that we were looking at to start. Am I correct in that?
We put the individual cost of it and then what would the total cost look like with that online registration piece.
So if we could do online registration, it would be really, really nice. And then because they can pay fees online.
Save some money on staffing, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, if we take the registration off of the calendar so it's not there yet, as we go through and determine what should it look like, or if you guys are comfortable with me saying, okay, you know, as we talk as a staff, we say, okay, this is what we're going to dedicate to registration. This is how it's going to line up. As far as those specific days, if you guys would feel comfortable with us just aligning that, we could remove that from the current calendar, put it where it needs to be, and then move from there.
I think we're looking for your recommendation to people in the trenches and you administrators to put it in the best place. But we were just pointing out that the issue last year, we recognized there needed to be something done.
Yeah.
I think you probably know the answer to how to solve it.
So we'll just work together to decide what would be the very best way to handle that and then just adjust those days accordingly.
Okay, and you suggested that we vote on a schedule in today's meeting? Is that
The agenda for voting, do we want
to... I think it might was supposed to be a vote.
It was in the folder for voting.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, all right. I'm not sure what the rules are, if we still want to, or if we can...
On the one that's posted, then it doesn't say specifically what each item is doing.
Okay, so we can probably go ahead and vote on it. And we want to also vote on the block schedule.
Yeah, block or modified block. Modified block is what we're doing currently. And the traditional block is what I recommended.
And so, in both cases, with the calendar and the the block versus modified block, we have recommendations. Other than the calendar, we would amend the registration night.
Right.
So if we had, I think we can vote on that.
So do we need a motion?
Yeah.
So a motion to move to the block schedule as recommended by Suzanne and to adopt the proposed calendar other than the registration, which is to be determined.
We want to make those one more.
We need separate
two.
Or same?
Probably
separate.
Two.
Yeah, let's do two.
Okay, so I'll motion that we move to the block schedule as recommended by Suzanne.
And one question before we get a second on that. There's two options I noticed that you have on the schedule. There's an option one and option two, traditional block. Which one are you proposing?
Option one, it more closely aligns with the Snow's college schedule and our feeder school schedule.
Okay, so that's the one that starts at 8:15 in the morning?
Yeah, and that's with lead. That is, in essence, catch-up plan time for that first 30 minutes, and then moving to leadership from there. So our official school day would begin with leadership.
Okay. That's clear. I just say option one in your motion.
Okay, so I motion to move to the traditional block schedule, option one, that was sent out to the board.
I'll second it.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, say nay. Okay, so we're to approve the block schedule proposal. We'll go on to the calendar.
I motion to approve the calendars proposed. Outside of the registration, do we need to change that?
Other than
the registration.
Yeah.
I'll second.
All in favor of voting for the schedule, as mentioned by Darren, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Okay. Yeah. Both have been passed. What else do you want?
Oh, good. Man.
Okay, good. We're ready to move on to SIS, I assume.
Rebecca with this has done most of the research and she compiled what you have in your packet. We just went ahead and left it online. If you want to, if you're in the voting folder.
So did everyone have a chance to look at that?
I skimmed it.
I skimmed it.
Do you want to give us a quick update?
Yeah.
So what we originally, the two things we were looking at, reason why we're looking to get a new SIS system is we want to improve the visibility with reporting, and also the scheduling has been an issue. Or it's been taking a lot of time, I guess, with the resources that we've been giving. And I tried to at first look into Aspire, the system that we currently have, and see if it can give us that, those, fill in those gaps that we've been missing. And on the reporting side, you can do it with Aspire. It is possible, but there's one or two options. The first option would be to host the server here ourselves, which would mean more manpower to do the security. You'd have to fix all the updates yourself. So if they had any updates with the software, you would have to maintain that as well. And you would then still have the raw data given to you, which they do not document their tables. I don't know if you know what that means, but because they are a, they give it away for free, and they are the only ones that work on that, and nobody else really has access to those tables. They don't document what tables or what fields are in which tables, and so for someone like me or someone else to go in there and make reports off of those, it would be very time consuming. And so we then looked at another option through Aspire, and it would be a data dump every morning or every week. And that was, maybe they could do it, and that one would be free, so we wouldn't have to host them on campus. But then we would still have to go through and figure out how to map all that data together to get the reports that we wanted out of that. So then we ended up looking at two different SIS systems to satisfy the requirements for the reporting. We looked into Skyward at first, and me and Kathleen went to Providence Hall because they are using Skyward. And after looking at it with him, we felt like, oh, that would be really neat. It had all these options for reporting and the scheduling. And after looking at that, we felt like that would be a really good option for us. And then we looked into PowerSchool after that and felt like it had more usability for the user. It was a lot easier to maneuver around the software system. And both of them satisfy the requirements that we need for reporting. They would give us access to our data, and they actually give us a mapping of it so that it's a little bit easier to make those reports. And both of them have the scheduling piece, but after looking at the prices for both systems and the usability, we felt like PowerSchool would be a little bit easier adoption and better choice to go with.
Who's using PowerSchool right now?
PowerSchool, we went and visited Park City, and they're using it right now. There is also a school down in Uinta, another charter school down.
It's American Leadership.
They're using that. And when we was talking to PowerSchool, they're actually having two additional schools getting PowerSchool right now within this month. And so,
did you ask the administrators at Park City and whoever uses PowerSchool?
One of the concerns we had when we went and looked at the system, Skyward, that Providence Hall is using, the guy that got, or that is the reason why they got Skyward, said that he used PowerSchool before that, and the reason why they switched from PowerSchool to Skyward because the reporting wasn't that great to the state. So we was a little bit concerned about that, so we went up to Park City to that school that's been using it for 15 years. They says that there was maybe one time they had an issue with the reporting up to the state, but they said it was their issue on their end. But other than that, they haven't had any issues with reporting. And
did,
so,
you, did you look at some of the reports they were using?
Yes. So they showed us some of the reports that they was using, and then they also showed us how they created those reports. And the lady that we was talking to said that it was pretty simple for her to create them. And she doesn't know SQL, and she says if you do know SQL, then it would be a little bit easier, and you would have more options, like you could do pretty much any report through there. Also, that's reporting through their interface. They also allow the ODBC connection, so you can connect it to like Crystal Reporting or BERT, and so there's a lot, those options.
Does it communicate with Master Connect?
That's another piece that we was looking into. You can do an API, so it would be read-only. You can't push data back and forth. But there's an assessment piece that they offer that you can buy alongside PowerSchool, and it's almost exactly like MasteryConnect. It's just the user interface is not as pretty as MasteryConnect, but I recommended to get that piece as well, because to add that piece would be an additional, I think, almost $2,000 a year, and I think that's cheaper than what we're paying for MasteryConnect right now. And the fact that if you want to build reports off of it, that you don't have to worry about connecting MasteryConnect to your SIS system. So they're already merged together and talking to each other, which would be a lot easier when creating custom reports.
Did you check that functionality as far as because I think Master Connect has some default concepts in there. Is that correct?
The standards, the state standards?
Yes.
Yeah, the assessment portion that this system offers does have those pieces in there. So what they do is they said that they actually have them actively adding new questions or assessments every month, and they said that if PowerSchool. So the PowerSchool company that maintains that assessment software adds those pieces, and then they also said if you wanted to create your own questions and tie different assessments to it, then that is then available for any of the other schools that are using that assessment tool.
Do they have the state standards in there?
Yes.
So you verified it against the state?
Yes, they did show that they have the state standards on
there. But it's not pretty?
For me, I don't think it's bad because I'm used to the back-end database side of things and I don't really care too much about how pretty it looks, but it doesn't have the newer interface that you see a lot of web pages have now. It just has the...
Because Master Connect is actually nice, and I don't know if it's a deal breaker, but it has that grid where you see the red, and who's in the red, and who's in the yellow, who's in the green, based on the concept that they mastered.
The reports
coming out of PowerSchool itself that we looked at, they are giving us some pretty reports, just straight out of PowerSchool.
Well, and with PowerSchool, I looked at their reports.
Connected to that concept mastery piece.
Yes.
Did you see how big their question bank is? That was the one thing I was hoping to see at Park City, but she didn't know on that.
They didn't go into detail on that. They just showed me a video that kind of went over that, so I could dig deeper into that if they needed to.
The other thing, too, is that that portion of Master Connect is actually free. So
our
we could continue to use that. The part that we're paying for is the admin reporting part. So if we quit paying for that and still had it and then connected it with...
Well, if you got the same results,
yeah.
How much is paying for MasterCard?
It's just over $4,000 a year.
A year?
Mm-hmm.
How much is this one per month?
It's not per month. It would be ongoing, would be an additional. So if you're looking at the same thing as breakdown in the TARS, we'll yellow the assessment portion in Aspire, the 41.
$1,980.
Yeah, so the $1,980 is the ongoing year to year. It has.
So that's yearly. This is a yearly charge.
Yes, this is yearly. Is that correct?
Yeah, they do have a startup cost that's a little bit more expensive to get the system up and running. But after that, they have the year to year cost that's a little bit cheaper.
Does this include that 10% decrease that they mentioned?
Yes. So I went in and updated it after. So it used to be, I think, let's see what got me to
your numbers.
Yeah, so it was going to be about $8,000 ongoing for just the basic SAS portion. And after they put that discount in there, it would be, I think, $7,750. So a little bit of a discount there.
And this price includes online enrollment, or is that...
So if you look down, there's the second portion, and in red it says recommended plus online registration. So the ongoing costs would increase from $9,000 to $11,000 per year, so it's an additional $2,000. An additional $1,500.
Okay. What's the difference called?
The difference is just saying the difference between Skyward and PowerSchool.
I know you've done a lot of work to narrow it down to these two or three programs here, but has anyone looked at what some of the top five, say, charter schools or the more established, the longer existing charter schools are using for this? Now, they may have already done this analysis and found something out there that's really good.
We did go visit some of the schools to see, when you talk to the salespeople, you know they're selling all the good points. We wanted to talk to somebody who's actually using it. So we did talk to Providence Hall is a charter school that has elementary, junior high, and high school, and they're using all of them. So they were the one who used the Skyward. And
you talk to somebody like Ames or somebody that's known for being an excellent program.
I'm not sure what Ames is using. That's a good question. But we can check into that.
And usually the salesperson will tell you. If they have a lot of schools, they'll tell you which ones.
Based on some of the information as we looked at it, Skyward was mostly used in some of those bigger districts, like Jordan District uses Skyward. Park City District is not a big district, and so it meets the needs. They have 5,000 students total that they use it for all of their schools.
For Park City.
And so.
So a lot of public schools.
So they're, there's kind of a variety of.
Traditional public schools.
A good chunk of the schools are using the Aspire because it's been free. And
we did look into American Prep, and they are using Aspire still.
That's what we're using now.
It's the Aspire. But based on our reporting, the things that we've been trying to pull, that was the reason we started looking, is because we have different.
I'm going to spend more than that doing what you need to do with Aspire.
So the additional cost to make Aspire do what we needed to do
with team. It seems like the cost isn't that big of an issue. It's going to do what we really want it to do. Mm-hmm. Not the upfront cost, but $10,000 a year, I think, is pretty reasonable.
Will it allow the teachers to give, not real-time input, but, I mean, can a parent go into the system and see what their kids are scoring?
The portion added as another recommendation that would improve that parent-teacher visibility is the second piece, the LMS piece. I think that's an additional.
Mm-hmm. It was at the top, though.
An additional $2,400. That's included in the $9,000 yearly cost. That piece would allow the teacher to communicate with the parents exactly what is assigned. You can attach anything to that. So if you assign a Quizlet or a Google Docs, you can embed that into that page that shows them their assignment for that day.
Was that not available through Aspire or Skyward?
Skyward, it does, and I didn't realize this till after I was looking more into the pricing and after we already kind of was leaning more towards PowerSchool, but that is another additional cost to Skyward, and they never got back to me on what that price would be.
So that there's a text alert down here. Is that, that's different than the LMS?
Yeah, the text alert is more if you have a snow day, you can send a mass text saying either it's there's no school that day, or if you have a late start, you can send a mass text.
It's
like,
not
texting. And send a reminder or something like that, just anything that you want to send.
But through the SIS system, both of them offer the opportunity to send like email messages through the SIS system.
So the text alert isn't that you have an assignment tomorrow, you better prepare.
So this system, you can actually send reminders, like it tracks behavioral issues, and if it goes below a certain point, then it'll actually automatically send that email, and you can set those
to a parent.
Absences and tardies and things.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a page where I can go in and look at each kid's grades and everything.
And I think PowerSchool had an app
page
as well, is that right?
Yeah, so, and we did also look at the app that both of them offered. We looked at Skyward's reviews, and I think they had like 20 different reviews on it, and they were almost all of them were one stars. And we looked at the PowerSchool app, and there was over 2,000 reviews, and they were average 4.5 5 stars on the information that it gave.
So the one place you do want it to look nice and have a nice presentation is to the parents.
Yeah, the parent side was
so,
the parent page was really neat.
So you would be able to see all of your kids. Was PowerSchool, you could select how much you could view, and you could see upcoming assignments and different options that way as a parent.
It was almost a combination of Google Classroom and Aspire and Master Connect all in one.
And the LMS portion that they offer is actually has an embedded feature with Google Classroom. They're the only LMS that offers that right now.
The biggest thing I saw with Skyward versus PowerSchool is PowerSchool seemed to have a lot better support. You know, as far as the help of anything that we might need or be able to function everything, the PowerSchool seemed to have a lot more support there.
And I did notice that with the salespeople too. I don't know if it probably is a good reflection on their support side, but anytime I contacted the salesperson for either side, the PowerSchool salesperson got me, the answer within a day. The other person I still don't have some answers for, so.
So where are they out of?
Power School.
I think they were in California. That's the registration charter bundle. It's one of the additional add-ons. I know you didn't recommend it.
That does the, that would do the lottery for us. So
$1,000 just to do a lottery?
Well, we were
a 5,000 population charter, which you're seeing in some of the other states, you know, 5,000 kids in a charter school or a district.
Another difference why you're seeing that big, huge change in the pricing, the online registration piece with that lottery piece includes more. They would set up your online registration page for you, which would give you more options on giving attachments and everything. The online registration amount that we recommended would be more, you're limited to only having this many customizations and having this many uploads on your forum.
Well, what's the difference of online enrollment and the lottery or just registration? And we didn't really feel like we needed the online enrollment for the new kids, but the registration would be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this one, you'd be able to online, do your online registration on this with this one.
There is a package in there that she recommended.
Yeah, the bottom part, so we, if you look at it, there's the recommended at the top, that that's really what we're recommending. If we feel like we do want to do the online registration, then we would recommend just the simpler version of it, not the version that needs the lottery.
One thing to note, the basic SAS bundle, you can re-register your students on that system online. The only thing you can't do is the new student registration.
Yeah, the biggest benefit of that one is new students.
So how easy is it for the teachers to enter like the SAGE interim data and all that stuff into this?
I didn't look into that.
Isn't that just like, any assessment or any assignment?
Yes.
It was really...
It was pretty intuitive. That was one of the reasons that we leaned toward this one instead of Skyward, because it was a lot easier to use.
Looked more
intuitive.
For our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. What's her name?
Miss Mom?
She'll be able to do it really easy.
She does better than you realize. But yeah, she will.
Yeah, that was one of the things as we looked at it, and we looked at the reviews. Kim, after the last meeting, sent a link with that was really nice to be able to look and see a lot of reviews on PowerSchool and Skyward and other systems, but PowerSchool was the top ranked one for on that site, and it had more reviews as well.
And I went to a conference at
USA.
I talked to a teacher that's actually using PowerSchool, and she said she has liked it so far, and she uses that to record all of her grades. She's only seen the teacher side of things, but she said she really did like it.
I used both of them as a teacher.
Yeah.
As a teacher, it didn't seem, that was years ago.
Yeah, I used Skyward 2 years ago, and the reports were confusing to understand which one you wanted and what you needed it to do. But as far as the grades, it wasn't too bad.
So I don't know if you already said this or not. How does this, do we host this ourselves? Do we?
No, so they host this. That's part of the ongoing piece.
Okay. So they?
They maintain the support, the security, the access, so you wouldn't have to worry about not having access at certain times of the night.
The data to the state.
They take care of all that. Good.
Yeah.
We talked to the people of the Park City, and they says they actually have a certain guy that's in charge of just the Utah reporting that pushes it back up. So if you have any issues, you would call him, and he would help you take care of it.
They also, when we talked to them in Park City, they said that if you need any help with anything, it says this feedback or the service is actually very quickly taken care of. Within a day, you get things taken care of.
Is this based on our enrollment count?
If you look at the top, it has a 450 count.
And in the sheet, then you have the option to change the amount of students, and the price will increase if you increase that number.
So if we bump our students up, we can, we'll just charge more.
But Power School ended up being around, with all the recommended pieces that we had, I think it was around $12, $15 per student, with mm-hmm. just the student costs, and then you had the hosting fees. And then I think Skyward was around $10, $12 per student. So Skyward is a little bit cheaper ongoing, and I feel like the reason why their starting costs are so high is because it takes a lot of training with Skyward, because it's not very intuitive. It would take a lot more to get the teachers on board with that system.
So do we have enough information to vote tonight?
We have a recommendation from
an expert.
Admin and everyone involved.
As we've gone through it, then I think we're all pretty 100% in agreement that we would recommend Power School.
And this would take an effect next year?
Mm-hmm. This summer.
This summer.
In fact, immediately.
They actually have been asking us for a decision on it quick, because if we add, or if we was to get it now, they can fly in and give us training in-state, so we don't have to spend the additional money to go out of state to get the training for that mm-hmm. scheduling piece. Because the two other schools are getting it, then they are offering us that in-state training if we give them an answer soon enough to get that training.
And they say that 4-day training, by the end of the 4 days, your schedule will be done.
So that
one
has
can
a lot
you imagine?
Do
we have allocated funds in the budget? Do we have allocated funds in the budget for it?
If we
Kathleen, we
always have money, okay?
Can we vote without Grace here? Can you vote?
Somehow got an extra $60,000 that's not going to employee benefits, so I think I'll benefit for this.
Is there anything we're spending on Aspire right now?
No.
That we need to nail with this.
If you put in the cost of Master Connect, if we do get that portion that we would get, so we could get rid of Master Connect, it would be that $4,000, but then we'd put in the price savings for the salaries we can just spend for
the
scheduling.
If you know the man hours that have been put in by our administrative staff to do the scheduling itself.
Okay.
And the additional cost it would take to get the reporting features out of the Spire would be a lot higher, I feel like. You'd have to hire an additional person just to spend.
We are paying for it.
So as far as subscription software costs, is it the $47,000
$1,000
Aspire is completely free. $44,000 setup. $44,000 initially, but annually it's paid.
Oh, per year, okay.
Yeah.
But then there's nothing to net against that that's saving by
just
not using Aspire anymore.
Just the master and man hours.
The master connect and the man hours.
Okay.
Master
the reporting.
We would get the reporting information that we're.
The reporting coming out of Power School would be very helpful for.
So again, man hour, the salaries don't change, so
right.
The budgeted dollars is going to stay the same. We just need to find another $50,000.
You just don't have to work for free during the summer.
It depends. Are you saying that if we was to go with the Power School option, we wouldn't be saving any money? It would just be an added cost, or so it would if you guys, if we don't want to look into getting the additional features on to Aspire to get the added cost.
Yeah. If we don't want the reporting
so
and
we
the
don't
data collection to happen, then we wouldn't have to spend any more. But if we do want to get those reports, if we do want to continue with something like Master Connect and merge those reports and put that out, then we would have to pay somebody to host it and man that and make it happen.
I think by the time you're done, and if we continue on the same path that we're continuing on, we're going to have to hire another secretary,
mm-hmm.
unless you get a software like this.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that the unanimous recommendation to go that way, that's what makes the most sense if it's in the budget. That's what we need to know. To vote.
So we'll give Grace a veto power, if she...
Yeah.
not funded in the budget.
Well, and maybe that even could be as part of the voting process, that contingent upon budget dollars being available in the budget, then that is
so when would we do?
We would do.
Yeah,
it's on the budget this year. And if you buy it now, I guess that's just paying for the next school year. It doesn't cost any additional by buying it a few months earlier.
So the reason why we're paying for it starting now, because we really need this time to set it up and get the training in time for the next school year.
So do you actually pay for anything? If you buy it now, do you pay your $10,000 yearly support for next year? Or is the $47,000 for this upcoming year, right? Is that
so
right?
We would pay, it would start the contract date as of the day that we choose to go with them, and then we would renew that, the yearly cost next year at this time, instead of at the school beginning of the school year. And the reason why they do that is they're going to start with the implementation process right when we sign up.
So their recommendation is to start now?
Yes. So that
and our recommendation?
We need to have whatever we're going to do in place now, because we've got to get all the students in, we've got to get all the classes loaded, we've got to get all of the scheduling lined up, and that...
It's a scheduling thing.
Yeah. It's better to start sticking the concert mastery in this than to continue.
It would, I think.
I have a question. Does the data that you collect now, can you pull it out? If you didn't like them anymore, can you pull your data out?
So they offer
an
OUBC connection so that you can access that data, and then you can also do exports.
So they let you go directly?
Yeah, and that's one difference between this and Aspire, and this is why we're looking into it. Aspire does not let us access our data. Whatever the reports they have, that's the reports you get. You can access, or you can ask them to build custom reports, but it just depends on if they have that time and that they can spend on
that's
it.
That's a terrible system.
Yeah. Do you know what system servers are using?
For
database
Aspire?
For database for
I don't. I know you can connect to a bunch of different reporting softwares.
Yeah. Just maybe put that on your checklist to check with.
Okay. There. Just what system is
what
you
database?
Use.
I think once we're to for the vote, if everybody feels comfortable.
And just have it contingent on having it fit into the budget and having Grace go over it.
So when would you start receiving the benefit of this?
Registration.
As soon as
we
schedule
together about 4 days instead of the 4 months that it takes of the summer.
We won't get the data reports of the grades until next year. So I'll have to.
Could you start using it all this year, or would it be no benefit?
The reason why you have to start now, it's going to take at least 2 months implementation.
I was wondering, is there any, could you implement any portions of it that would be a benefit for this school year, just start August?
I don't think there's a schedule this year for next year is probably the only thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the online registration.
Yeah,
and
we'll
should we make that clear? You recommended doing the online registration portion.
Yeah.
So we actually recommended to wait till next year because I thought we already had the online registration done for the new students. Are we?
Or you're talking enrollment. Enrollment's different than registration. So not enrollment for new kids. We just want registration online.
You mean for existing kids, right?
Yeah.
So parents
could go in and choose for existing
students. Well, I'm just clarifying. So we're being recommended plus online registration.
On the registration process, does that include that parents can go in and choose electives for their kids? Or is that just simply putting and updating student information?
I'll have to clarify with that. But from talking to them, it sounded like that you could already do the re-registration for current students in the basic SIS system. The online registration portion is just for new students.
So just enrollment.
So that's just putting the student information in. That's not
course
selection and schedule building.
Yes.
So that's different than registration.
But this is registration.
It says on
the list. Probably need to.
Maybe I'll get a clarification on that.
That was my understanding as well when we asked them.
That it was.
And then, but most of it was included.
That
online portion was
online
not for the new.
Just enrollment.
Yeah, I think that's. And then, then that's just enrollment. That's not course requests and schedules.
Fees. Can it be fees online on this?
You could.
You can track the fees on there. It has a fee management, but you have to connect through a different credit card system.
So we already have a credit card system set up.
But can parents pay online at home when they register the kids?
We'd have to look into that credit card system that we have, but I think, I don't know, I'd have to look into that.
Because that's probably our longest line is paying for things.
So the recommended is without the online registration at this point.
And then,
I think if we went with that recommendation, we could add that later if you find out it's different.
The reason why we recommended not to include it at first because there's already been so many other things we're adding all at once, and it would be kind of a lot to add that piece as well. If we can look into it.
Let's look into the details of it and see if it's something that's necessary, because if it's just entering student data, their name, birth date, yada, 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 that can be rolled over from our current SIS system, correct? And so it's just entering the new 90 kids that we enroll, that's not worth paying a system to do yet.
I'm almost positive that online registration piece is just the new students putting their data in.
And that doesn't make any sense.
I pulled it up as far as what they have online. It does also say kind of how we have the intent to return for current students, where they verify information as well. Mm-hmm. So some of those pieces are there, but consider
that. At registration, we just printed it out, and the parents updated it on their things. And I think even on Aspire, they can get online and change data. I'm not positive, but like I say, with the few number that we have to actually enter all that data in, I don't think it's
that's
worth
kind of what we were thinking from what we understood.
Okay. So the vote would be on $44,151.01 initial cost and a $95.26 ongoing.
Okay. So I'll motion that we go with PowerSchool SIS system with the $44,151 upfront. Cost of $95.26 ongoing. Should we say that's contingent on Grace approving it in the budget and having veto power over it?
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Okay. It's been approved to move forward on that. any other discussion on the software? SIS software? If not, we'll go to Eric on the mission vision of extracurricular.
And this one really is going to take 5 minutes. So we met last week with our revamped committee. We added some committee members, and we came up with the mission statement for this extracurricular committee. So the mission statement is to establish guidelines and goals for extracurricular activities and programs and ensure that they are in line and enhance Vanguard's mission and charter. Any input on that? And then our vision statement is that procedures will be set for all extracurricular activities at Vanguard Academy to ensure that they will follow established and approved guidelines. And then in addition to that, so extracurricular activities will be self-funded, self-sustaining, and will enhance Vanguard's charter. And then we wanted to include Vanguard's mission and pillars in there. And then some of the things we talked about are that we don't want this committee necessarily to last forever. We want to set up the policies and procedures in place so that they will have a packet to go to and different things they can do to set up different clubs and extracurricular activities and things like that. So the committee is going to set up the guidelines. It's not necessarily going to approve every single activity, but we'll set up the packets and the guidelines so that anyone can go and submit something, and then the administration of the school will either approve it or deny it. And then so some of the things we're going to do in our next meetings are set up these packets and set up the different things. And one day then the committee will be able to hopefully disband and the administration will have everything in place too.
So the disband is probably, excuse me, after the packets have all been?
Yeah, after everything's set up, all the guidelines are there, all the packets are there, and then it should be able to hopefully run itself within the school.
Sounds good. Is that kind of what you were saying?
Yeah. It's 2 minutes.
Any other comments or input? Other things we should be doing other than that?
A student came to me this week and said that the board did not approve the California trip that the teacher told him that.
There was not a board vote. There simply was not funds to pay the down payment. The down payment was due. The payment wasn't there.
When I told the teacher the information, I just said, based on what the board had said before, the funding needed to be there in order to make any payments. We had to have the entire funding. We were not even funded to the halfway point that needed to be paid. We didn't even have enough to make the down payment, and that's what I said. So the decision was that we must have the funding. So.
Yeah, that's just a comment. I've been hearing rumors all
we'll
years, so.
Make sure and clarify that,
yeah.
Because we really just did not.
It really was the funds had not been raised, and the deadline
and
came.
That counted all of the students, even the ones that were not going. We included all of the funds that all of the students had raised. There was not enough to even make the down payment.
The kids need to know that though, so that's what it is.
So how do we tell the students that the board members met this day, and they took actions to make this school more excellent? What's the announcement that comes out of this meeting? Well, this is a good example. If this was presented in a positive manner, this would be good. This is good. We don't talk about anything else, but if this was presented in a positive manner to all the students, they could say, wow, our board of directors is doing something that helps us to be better.
Does it help on that same vein? Because there was a really big push to get funds and funding for the trip. Tell them that we made it halfway, we didn't meet our goal, but we want to try harder next time, or I don't know if there's a positive way to spin that.
Are those funds sitting somewhere and able to be applied to it next year's?
They are using those to go to Lagoon this year, some of those funds, and the rest of them are going to sit.
To me, I still have a concern with that idea, though, because to me that sounds like as long as we can fund it, then it's okay. And to me, I still think they need to have administration okay on any activity. Not that just the funds weren't there, but it's got to be approved.
That's, yeah.
Or is that?
That's where this committee is going to come in.
Yeah, it's got to get approved through the packet, and everything's not necessarily going to be. But yeah.
To me, I don't like saying, well, this wasn't funded, so you couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I like saying, this is a good activity or not a good activity. Whether it comes from the board or the administration,
that is the case as we put this together. But, you know, we were running on nothing as the year started, and they proposed the tour and brought it to the board, and the board said, what about this? And, you know, the board required that the funding was there in order for it to be able to happen.
I think those guidelines will be helpful so that next time someone
in
proposes
the future.
A project, you can see if it meets set guidelines
right
before there's even a question of whether it meets the funding or not. Does it meet the guidelines?
Correct. And that is really what the hope of the committee is that we have that set up to a point that they have to consider all aspects of it.
So then this paper should change so these two things switch places.
Which two things?
The things on extracurricular activities will be self-funded. That shouldn't be the primary thing on the list.
So the mission pillars is first?
Yeah.
And have that go through that process, or reflect that process.
So that it's an afterthought. The first thing that has to happen is I have to meet the goals and the mission and vision. And then it has to be self-funded.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
I don't think that order.
Yeah, I was
not a criticism, it's just an observation.
And the music teachers are on the committee, and they're planning on using the California trip as kind of a trial run to go through the packet instead of a packet based on, I mean, it's not the only thing they're going to base it on, but we're going to go through that and then put that through the packet and see if it does meet the things that we're hoping to meet.
Mm-hmm. And also to make sure that the packet meets the requirements.
Right. Just to change the order?
Or no, I mean, was it just to make this presentation to the board? Was that something you were?
It wasn't an open point, it was just an item for this meeting.
Okay.
So.
Wasn't that a.
It was an open point at one time, and then we just added it to the agenda.
Okay, good. Okay. I think that's the end of the agenda. Any votes to motion to close?
Motion to close meeting. I'll second.
All in favor of closing the board meeting, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Nay. Okay, board meeting is officially closed.